Let's talk about voice volume, pitch rate, pauses that we've talked about, and the importance of what we call verbal packaging, the way you say things, vocal variety. And we know it can mean a lot of things, you know, when you're on a date with that special girl and she says, "That was nice." You know, how did she say it? "Well, that was nice. That was nice. That was nice. That was nice." I mean, we can phrase things in a different way. So, articulation and a good delivery is how you say it. Say, you know, today we're going to talk about suicide. And suicide is one of the biggest problems here in America. And you know, about two or three out of this room are going to commit suicide. And so that's part of it too. You're like, woo. And so it depends on the situation and what you're doing and what you're talking about. You really got to watch the words that you use and the inflection. Sometimes it's not the best time to be happy. And this also includes nonverbal communications. Now, will people believe nonverbal is more or what you say? What are they going to believe? 93% of the impact of your message comes from a nonverbal source. 93%. So if you're not congruent with your body language, people will not believe you. It's very significant. You're always communicating. You know, with these we can falsify messages. What are some of the nonverbals that you really want to avoid? We've talked about some of them. Touching your face, keeping your feet on the floor, eye contact. What percent of the time you want eye contact? It depends what you're going after. Research shows the most credible speakers, it's about 63%. You know, that's one of those numbers that's out there. 80% means you're sexually attracted to the person, okay? 100%, what would it be when you gaze at someone for 100% of the time? What does that mean? Well, psycho would be one, but you're angry. That's an angry pose 100% of the time. So be careful of those things. And you need to treat a room like a clock as far as eye contact, as far as looking at the different room. Because as a speaker, you might be looking the whole time with eye contact, but you're looking at two different parts of the audience. But do make sure that your language is appropriate for the occasion. You know, funeral, trucker's convention, you know, throw in some profanity. Kidding. Would you throw in profanity? We mentioned that. I mean, it's not going to give you a lot of credibility. The topic is appropriate for the topic. And is it appropriate for you? So short, simple, and use plenty of action words. Most attention spans are about 30 seconds long. So know the meanings of your words and articulate. Now, I was a problem, you know, sometimes I'll speak 7-8 hours, and successful always comes out, so sex, and that's not very good. I just have a problem with that word. Now, since I've had a problem with that word, I always have to think about it, and sometimes it still comes out wrong. And the words are so critical. Again, words create emotion. They create pictures in our mind. It's how we communicate. I mean, think about it. How do these words make you feel? Death. Cancer. Miserable. Depressed. You're kind of wrong. Versus wealth. Success. Happiness. But you feel the difference between the words? I mean, as far as the reactions they have within you. And so the way you package it is a critical thing. In fact, the airline industry, very careful with the words that they use. Words trigger emotions, and words can trigger a lot of different things. And if you're sitting on an airplane, I do a lot of flying, and listen to what they're saying. And they say something like this: in the event of a water landing. Hello, what does that mean? You're crashing in the water, but they're what? Because you don't want to cause panic and make a lot of people are scared to fly. In the event of a water landing. And then they don't have any life preservers on board. What do they call them? Flotation devices. There's no barf bag. They call them, if you pull out the bag, it says for motion discomfort. Barf. Right? They don't clean planes. What do? Refresh them. There's no bathrooms on board. What do they have? Oh, Tories. They have planes never late. What is it? Delayed. They never lose your luggage. It's misplaced. Huh? You see how that works? The plane's never broke. It's having mechanical difficulties. Do I have a little tension in my voice? You know how many times I've been stuck. But I mean, that is a good thing as far as the words they use. It keeps the temperature down. Oh, the plane's broke. The engine fell off, you know. And you say, oh, there's you know, slight mechanical difficulties. And they just kind of lead you along. And that's part of the contrast, too. They don't say it's going to be a two-hour wait because they have a mutiny. What do they say? You ride an airplane? It's like those lines at Disneyland. Oh, I'm almost there. You see another loops and you keep going. You're almost there. And, You keep going on the same time. What they do with the airlines is what? Oh, about another 15 minutes. We got a mechanic working right on it. And then about 25 minutes later, the pilot gets on. Oh, they think they found the problem. They're getting close. Probably another 15, 20 minutes. They're about 25, 30 minutes to get on. Oh, we're close. We're getting working on the paperwork. You know, just bear with us for another 10 minutes. You know, 15. And then that spreads it out for an hour. But people don't get as tense in that situation than if you would say, oh, it's about a 2-hour wait. It's a big difference as far as some other things. The Republican Party published something called The Language, the Key Mechanism of Control. And they said, use these words. When you're speaking, use these words. Courage, dream, duty, family, freedom, liberty, moral, passionate, pride, prosperity, strength, truth, and vision. Those are good words, right? And they say, when you're talking about your opponents, use these words. Betray, cheat, corruption, crisis, destroy, devour, disgrace, failure, greed, hypocrisy, incompetent, obsolete, pathetic, radical, self-serving, shallow, steal, and taxes. I mean, you feel the difference. I mean, word choice is critical. Most people don't spend the time to think of it. We're in the middle of a war right now. But actually, it's not a war, is it? What is it? They don't call it a war. A conflict? Peacekeeping mission? What they call Vietnam was a police action? Right? And it's amazing, too, with the war, during the wars, the way the things, they say, well, you know, we did really well today, but we had a little collateral damage. Does anybody know what that is? Yeah, you killed some civilians. And they no longer have concentration camps anymore. Ethnic cleansing. Oh, good, you're cleaning up. You had to see that, you know. You know, they don't call them taxes anymore, they're user fees. You know, the real estate, they say, well, our home's convenient to the interstate, which means freeways in the backyard. You know, they have the lawyers, you know, fighting in cases. One side is using the word unborn child. The other side is using what? Fetus. Right? You feel the difference between the two? Pro-life, pro-choice. The MX missile, they called the peacekeeper. This was interesting. When the stock crashed, they called it a correction or a retrenchment. No, it crashed. No, it was just a correction. So you can use with people different type of languages. Most people either visual, auditory, or kinesthetic. Those are the three things that most. Anybody studied these? They may study the NLP before. Visual, auditory, kinesthetic. Most people rely on one pattern. Visual people, when you ask them a question, this is about 75-80% of the population will look up. Okay, auditory people will look side to side, and kinesthetic people that are feeling will look down. The reason that's important, because as a speaker, especially when you're speaking to people one-on-one, if you're a visual person, I would say something, well, do you see what I mean? Do you see where I'm going? And there's even more science as far as which way they look and a few other things, but that's kind of the general science. And if it's an auditory person, you'd say, do you hear what I'm saying? Do you hear where I'm going? And to a feeling person, he says, well, how does that make you feel? Did you feel what I was talking about? It's an amazing science. But keep things the way you say things. For example, Lincoln said, 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth in this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Famous, right? He could have said, 87 years ago, the signers of the Declaration of Independence started a new country designed to assure us freedom and equality. Same thing, different words. And of course, there's God and devil terms. Have you heard that before? The God term would be, when you go to the store, what are you looking for in food? You know, fat-free, that's a God term. Or a devil term would be, I mean, when you buy Ben and Jerry's, it doesn't say 97% fat. I mean, that would be. And, you know, a devil term would be, you know, gas guzzler or something like that. So let me show you these, because when you paint the picture, I'm sure it's all about word choice, because you can call somebody stupid. I mean, it's amazing. I was in San Francisco this weekend, and instead of transsexual surgery, they call it gender reassignment. All right, instead of calling them stupid, few clowns short of a circus, few fries short of a happy meal. See, you're painting the picture here. Dumber than a box of hair. See, you're learning some good things today. Few peas short of a casserole. This is my favorite. The wheel is spinning, but the hamster's dead. One Fruit Loop shy of a full bowl. One taco short of a combination plate. Few feathers short of a whole duck. Chimney's clogged. Elevator doesn't go all the way to the top floor. His belt doesn't go through all the loops. missing a few buttons under her remote control, forgot to pay his brain bill. See, it's how you say it. That's why I show you. These are kind of fun, but, you know, it's how you say things. And you want to keep things as simple as possible. Simple is better than complex. You need to watch your jargon that people wouldn't understand. And, you know, just the word choice is so critical. I mean, does anybody here do sales in sales? Word choice, especially in the sales arena, the persuasion arena, is critical because a word you say can stop them from purchasing a product. For example, if you're buying a car, there's some words you never use. When you ask, somebody asks, well, how much does it cost? Would you ever say, well, the cost is? What would a true professional say? The investment. Your investment today. Does that sound better? Your investment. How about, well, here's the contract. What's a contract? What's that trigger in your mind? Yeah, contract. So you say, you know, here's the paperwork. And I'd never say sign it, would I? Because sign it's another red flag word. You say, why don't you go ahead and okay the paperwork? See how easier and softer that is? You know, well, when you buy today, you know, it's kind of one of those ones. You say, when you get involved with the product, instead of asking for a credit card, you'll ask for a form of payment. What's your form of payment? See how soft that is? And if they call your product cheap, you say, no, it's not cheap. It's just more economical. Well, the interesting is when people come to hear you speak to feel better about themselves. Do you believe that? Why is that? I mean that's your role as a speaker. People want to leave feeling better about themselves. And that's one of the interesting things you need to realize as a speaker is that's one of the most important things you need to hit is help people feel better about themselves. What about charisma? Do we have charisma? What is charisma? You walk in a room, people automatically like you, you have an energy. Has anybody met anybody with charisma? Can you learn charisma? You think that you're just born with it? It's telling. I mean, you actually attract people. They feel comfortable. They're drawn to you. It's almost like a religious devotion to you. It is in a lot of ways. I mean, people are attracted to you. But charisma is something that you can develop as a speaker. There's a lot of good programs on that, but it just draws people to you. You can lose charisma, you know, if you do the wrong things, but it's just, it's kind of hard to really explain. You just kind of know when it's there, and you just it just draws people to it. It's kind of one of those amazing things with charisma. What is persuasion? Anybody know? And how about a textbook definition of persuasion? How many of you consider yourself master persuaders? There's different levels of persuasion. You can use fear, which works very well. Do it or you're fired. Do it or I'll kill you. Do it or I'll send you to your room without dinner. That's fear. It works, doesn't it? That's considered persuasion. You're getting people to do what you want them to do. But what's the problem with that type of persuasion? Okay, they don't like you very much. It's temporary. What happens when that authority figure's not there anymore? They're gone. And is something else happen? Is there any type of backlash? Any type of resentment? Any type of backlash? Yeah. They have videotapes of people doing things to bosses' coffee. Seen these videotapes? That's because of resentment. That's because people pulled rank and are upset. That's what happens. You know, we've all had authoritative, even parents. Anybody know any authoritative parents? It could have been your own that this is the law, but when they were gone, woohoo, it didn't matter. So that's one type of persuasion. What's another type of persuasion? Guilt is a type. You can use guilt or pity. You can use what they call utility. Anybody know what utility is? Win-win. I mean, why do most of you go to work?
Money.
Would you do it without? Would you do it without the money? Would you go to work without the money?
No?
Would anybody go to work without the money? Yeah, it depends. I mean, if it was your passion, you loved what you were doing, and money was not an issue, you would do that. The first one, when you use fear, take your children, for example. This is the easiest form of persuasion. It's easy. Do it, or I'll spank you. That's easy, right? Anybody can do that. You know, the thing is with parents, they start out, you know, Junior, you know, eat your Brussels sprouts. They're good for you. We love you. We want what's best for you. No. Junior, if you eat your Brussels sprouts, I'll give you ice cream. No. Okay, you know, you either eat those Brussels sprouts right now, or I'm going to take you over my knee. Have you ever seen that process before? It's just easier, but it does not last. See, a lot of people are using rewards to persuade. And we're to a point in the society that we won't do things unless we're rewarded. Most people will not get credit cards now unless what? You get a free gift or you get something back. I mean, whether it be airline miles or, you know, I mean, that's where it's going to. And people reward you. In fact, when I grew up, we had Crest, Cheerios, and Tide. I mean, that's what Mom bought. And there was no other option. Now what do you buy? Anything you want. We've talked about how that works. in different aspects. So when you reward somebody, in fact, that's even ruining our school systems, right? Because if you read, what do they reward you with? They have these reading programs now, right? Did you hear this, right? If you read for a month straight, what do they give you, usually? Yeah? My daughter still gets the Pizza Hut certificates. And so she's excited, she reads, and she gets a Pizza Hut certificate. Great, she's reading. But what is the bigger issue that is destroying our society? They're not reading unless you give them something. So we've ingrained since childhood, and when they become adults, they don't read because no one's giving them anything. American, it's like, well, no more than that. About 90% of all Americans don't even read a nonfiction book after college or high school. Oh. Now, when there's a direct correlation between your personal development, what you read, and your income, and you see what's kind of happening to our society. I mean, that's just, TV's easier. And that's true. You know, no war was started for giving something. It was always for taking something away. What if you owned a company and you got a turkey every year, you got a Christmas bonus every year, and all of a sudden it didn't happen anymore? I mean, people expect that. I mean, that's part of it, so you have to be very careful. So that's one way. Then another type of persuasion and influence, we'll go over definitions here in a second, is just, you know, type of commitment. You can coax people, you can sell people, but then true commitment, which is influence, is somebody asks you to do something, you do it. No questions asked. Is there anybody in your life right now that would ask you to do anything, you do it, no questions asked? Your parents, okay, no questions asked. Okay, no questions, didn't matter what it was, you would do it. You trust them enough that they would ask you. Okay, great, perfect. Who else? Anybody else? Even if you didn't understand it, you would have done it. Grandparents, maybe? You have three things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about persuasion, influence, and power. Persuasion is basically what you do and you say. And I'll talk about different things that you can do that persuades people. What you do and what you say. That's persuasion. Influence is who you are. Credibility, trust, passion, charisma. And power increases your ability to persuade and influence. What is a form of power that somebody would have that would automatically persuade you no matter what they said? Okay, authority. That could also be a policeman, right? The uniform automatically persuades you more. What about a professor? Knowledge. Somebody that knew more than you did would be a type of power. It's coercive power and a few other things. And so those are three things that we want to spend time with. Because there is a one-to-one relationship between your ability to persuade and your income. Anybody agree with that? One of the highest paid skills out there. Especially speakers that can persuade. Now there's a lot of good speakers that are great presenters, but they can't persuade to do anything. And I've seen speakers get up, persuade half the audience to buy a $2,000 product. And then I'm just doing the math, and they just made $100,000. 2 hours time. Have you ever been persuaded by somebody and you're just like, whoa, what just happened? Has that ever happened to you? You're sitting there and all of a sudden you have a car in your garage, or it's amazing. I mean, you just meet people and sometimes they just do it. Now, most people treat, have you heard the saying, you know, if you're a hammer, you treat everyone like a nail? If you're a hammer, you treat everyone like a nail. Meaning, when you meet people, there are a plethora of tools, of persuasion tools and influence tools that you use. Most people know two or three and they just use those over and over and over again. So wait, what is a stereotypical persuader or salesman? What is the stereotype? Dressing it up, okay. Maybe a little deception. It's another stereotype.
Flattery.
Does that work? We call it ingratiation. That is the scientific term for what? Well, the street terms would be boot licking or brown nose. That's ingratiation. And that's part of it, too. That is part of, even when the studies show that even when people know that you're buttering them up, that you're doing these things, even when you know it's fake, it still works. Why? Because we've talked about esteem, right? That's one of our biggest cravings. We want to feel better about ourselves. And we'll spend some time talking about that. So we want to give you the keys to the piano persuasion, some different tools and techniques. I mean, bottom line, you're useless as a speaker when you get up and speak if you can't get the audience to do something. Why would you speak if you can't get a point across and get them to act and do something? Does that, you agree with that? I mean, that's what it's all about. That's why persuasion is so important. And we're so locked up in the negative things about persuasion. Some people think it's deceptive. It's like 50% of people think it's black magic. Like, you're going to buy, give me $50, you know. They think it's this little black magic, but there's actually skills that people can learn. Now, are you born with it? Or do you learn it? There's a little bit of both. Is it art or is it science? A little of both, too. So we'll talk about those things. But again, the world's caught up in the negative aspects of persuasion. We've all had that boss or the teacher that used their authority or that negative, just to give a bad taste in your mouth. Have you ever heard about that, the fable about the sun and the wind fighting, mad at each other? Well, let me tell you, fable about the sun and the wind. The sun and the wind don't like each other. They hate each other. They're always fighting back and forth as far as who's the most powerful force in the universe. The wind was thinking, you know, hurricanes, tornadoes, I can flatten cities. I'm the most I have the most power. And the sun was thinking, well, I cause life to live. You know, I'm the sun. And so they fought back and forth. And so one day they decided to have a little contest. And the wind was looking down and saw this old man, skinny old man with a jacket. It was unzipped. And he said, okay, the contest says whoever can get that man to take off his jacket. And so the wind was up first, and he blew. And what did the old man do? He held it tighter and tighter and tighter. And the harder the wind blew, the tighter the man held on. He held on. He even knocked him over, but he still held on to his jacket. And the wind gave up. The sun kind of smiled, and all he did is he cranked up the heat, became warmer and warmer. Birds of perspiration came on the old man's forehead, and what did he do? Took off his jacket. And that's true persuasion. We could beat anybody up, but when you go into, anybody been to a timeshare presentation before? Been to a car dealer before? What is your attitude when you go into a car dealership? What's your mindset? Yeah, they're going to try to get you, you're going to resist them, and good persuasion. I mean, the bottom line is to get others to want to do what you want them to do and like it. Right? The son got the old man to do what he wanted to do, and they both won. I mean, that's true persuasion. That's the higher end of persuasion. And that's the scary thing about teaching these things professionally is that you can use them for good or evil. Is that true? I mean, these things, they work. There are psychological triggers in our mind that cause us to, that just work. Why do you think that works? Why are there just things in our mind that work that persuade us without even thinking about them? You want to take a guess? Why is that? Human nature. I mean, bottom line, it comes to this. We are bombarded with over 5,000 persuasive messages a day. We don't have time to analyze every single one, so we create mental shortcuts. And these mental shortcuts usually work. They usually work. We want to get people to what we call move a notch. Because you can't persuade 100% of the people 100% of the time. I mean, I could be on the street corners of New York handing out $100 bills for a quick survey, and would everybody take it? No, they wouldn't. So persuasion is a psychological process, something you do with an audience, not to an audience. And part of becoming a master persuader, you have to know both sides of the issue, and something very powerful we call inoculation. Have you heard the term inoculation before? Inoculation? No. Medical term? Inoculation is a shot. Let's say, what is it? Chickenpox. To be inoculated against chickenpox, what do? They give you what? What do they actually give you? A shot of what? A weak form of chickenpox, which your body will develop immunities to. And that is critical. And that's what they do with young people in the cigarette campaigns. They need to give people ammunition. If you don't talk to your children about drugs and people asking them to take drugs before it actually happens, they have no ammunition, and a lot of them are persuaded. And they found this in World War II. A lot of the pilots were coming back against the United States. And they thought, well, are they brainwashing? What's happening? And basically, they were sending them down and asking about their beliefs and what was wrong with their country and giving them all these things, and they never really sat down to defend their country. So what inoculation is we're actually talking the weak form of your arguments. Say two people are speaking. For example, if you're a lawyer, and you're up there and you're speaking first, and you know that your client is evil and ugly, and so you say, you know, they're going to say my client's evil. He's ugly, he's a menace to society, and nobody likes him. And that's probably true. But that's not why we're here today. We're here because he's accused of being a thief. That's inoculation, because when the prosecutor gets up, what happened to their ammunition? Can they say that? I mean, the sting is gone. That's inoculation. You are looking, if someone's going to persuade you to do something, what do you need? Emotion? Reason? Statistics? Stories? Remember we talked about the big five? I'll make sure you have those. Do some research. You also need to keep in mind the ideas and feelings of your audience, and you need to only persuade on one thing, because an audience can get hostile real fast. Let me just give you just kind of a basic outline that most people use. This is Monroe's Motivated Sequence. It's probably the most popular. And this is his sequence as far as the structure of persuasive argument. First, you got to grab their attention. The greatest enemy of any master persuader is indifference. If people don't care, they will not listen. That's where your WIIFM comes in. What's in it for me? Why should I listen? Why should I care? Who are you? Why should I give you my mental energy? Need. Make the audience feel a need for change. Okay, what are their needs? Satisfaction. So once you've created a need in their mind, you need to have a solution. Satisfy the sense by need of providing a solution to the problem. What is your solution? You've created a need. Okay, now I need to listen. I know it's something that's in there for me. What is the solution? Visualization. Intensify desire by a solution by visualizing the benefits. Have them see, feel, touch, hear, whatever that solution is. Have them see themselves doing it. Donating to the American Red Cross. Whatever it is. And last, action. Call to action. That's critical. I need to know exactly what I'm supposed to do. If I'm kind of fuzzy, well, that was great, but what am I supposed to do? That's not successful. You need a call to action to urge the audience to take action in support of the solution. Because you need to make the call to action as easy as possible. If I say, well, write your congressman, you're like, okay, I'll write my congressman. Well, what happens? Do you? Have you ever written your congressman?
No.
Has anybody here written a congressman before? A few of you? Okay. Make it as easy as possible for people. Call to action would be sign a petition or whatever it is. You need to make it as easy as possible. See, persuasion is critical in any aspect of life, whether you're a parent or a leader or a manager, is that human beings resist and hate to make decisions. All right, so you're at a used car lot. Salesman will come up, just like when you walk into the clothing store. Can I help you? Just looking. Right? We have these knee-jerk reactions because we're so afraid sometimes that someone's going to convince us to do something. Most people, but you want this car. You already know what you want. Most people think, oh, I need to think about it. That's what most people do. What most people do, even when you knew it was the right thing and you wanted to buy it, a lot of people, especially your higher-end products, will want to think about it because we're so afraid to what? Afraid to commit, we're afraid to make bad decisions. So that's why persuasion is so important in the process. So I'm going to teach you some of the ways to be able to do that. So people are more persuasive when they have more facial contact and eye contact. Things you need to look back. Careful when you step back. When you're at the height, the climax, when you're giving the call to action and you're stepping back, what is that telling the audience? So that's important. I mean, if you move around, that's fine. You just need to be aware when you're coming to that most important part, if anything, you're moving forward. A relaxed faced speaking rate. They've done a study on people with persuasion as far as those with higher volume, more vocal inflection are much more persuasive than those who don't have that. And so do speak up. And persuading is more than informing. Part of persuasion in the persuasion process, and something called cognitive dissonance. Leon Festinger, 1957, Stanford University, came up with this area called cognitive dissonance. Now, first of all, what are your cognitions? Here, your beliefs, your attitudes, your thoughts. And then dissonance would be a discrepancy between your beliefs and your thoughts. And the rule is it causes disharmony. We like consistency in our life. And when there's dissonance, when you as a persuader can create dissonance in somebody's mind, you need to provide a solution that will cause action. Meaning if you're watching late night television and there's one of those infomercials on the children in Africa, and for 25 cents a day, you can help them out. And they talk about, you know, America being a land of abundance and that you're a charitable people. Well, yeah, this is probably a good cause. And you feel like you need to donate. Now, what are your choices? You can't live with that. Okay, this is the law. You can't live with that until you get rid of it. How do we get rid of it? Okay, we change the channel. Oh, probably a scam. Right, it probably doesn't go to them anyway. It all goes to bureaucrats. So we've rationalized it. That's one way. What's another way? We could donate, right? Yeah, 50 cents a day. I can do that. I'll feel good. We can say, well, those numbers can't be right, and they don't know what they're talking about. I mean, we can't live with that. That's called dissonance. So we see it all the time, you know. Jody is a strict vegetarian. And she goes, and it's a beautiful leather jacket. Oh, it looks good on me. Wow, it's beautiful soft leather. I don't know if I'm a vegetarian. You know, I don't even wear leather shoes. But man, this is really going to pick up the guys. You know, I don't look good in this leather jacket. No. An animal died for that. Oh, this feels so good. You know? We go through those fights. We rationalize. Right, leather jacket. You know, well, cow's already dead. Yeah, someone's going to buy it anyway.
What if my vegetarian friends see me?
I look so good. And so that's part of rationalization is cognitive dissonance. It could be a minor thing, you know, paper or plastic at the grocery store. Now, we're creative. We're good. You're talking about cognitive dissonance. We are good. We can rationalize anything.
That is dissonance, the power. We can spend all day on that, but that's a powerful, powerful thing you need to understand with persuasion. Especially automatic triggers, which we're going to talk about now, some of the laws of persuasion. Nice too. So laws of persuasion. I've developed 12 laws, and I'm not going to go over all of them. The 12 laws of persuasion. These are automatic triggers, knee-jerk reactions that just persuades people. And it's scary because we could just be persuaded like that and not even know it. We've all been there. You're coming home with that thing in the trunk of your car and you can't believe you bought it and how did it happen? That's persuasion. Again, we don't have time to process all the information that comes towards us. We look for shortcuts. I mean, one, for example, this company had a printing mistake on a discount coupon. To actually, you paid more using the coupon than if you didn't use the coupon. But the response rate was exactly the same. Why? What's our shortcut? Coupon? Save money. Right? You don't have time to read the coupon or analyze. You don't want to look at the price and get your calculator out and do the math. Coupon? Save money. It's that simple. That's the mental shortcut because we have these automatic behavior patterns. And one of them we've already talked about a little bit, and I call it the law of verbal packaging. It's how you say it. We've talked about painting the picture. We've talked about, remember we talked about the airlines, right, and the words that they use. One of the studies was done by, her name was Elaine Langer. She was a college professor. And she wanted to test the word because. Now, first of all, the opposite, the worst word you can use as a persuader is what? What is the worst word that I just mentioned a few minutes ago? But. Why is but such a bad word? It's an exception, and what's it do to everything you said before? Negates everything that you've said. Anybody here married? You know, when you come out in a dress, you feel like, well, how do I look, dear? Oh, you look great. But, you know, it kind of makes your hips look a little... What do you remember?
Just the last part.
Yeah, it negates everything. You know, even on a date, oh, you look beautiful, but, you know, your hair thing. And so, as a persuader, you just want to take it out of your vocabulary. Just use the word and. You look great, and... It's that simple. So, because it's powerful, because it gives us a reason. People want a reason to do something, even if it's not valid, they want a reason. So what she did, she went up to make sure there's a line at the photocopy machine, and she said, excuse me, I have 5 pages, may I use a Xerox machine, because I'm in a rush. Would you let her in? Some of you are thinking yes, some are no. 94% let her in. Then she went over again, just to test it out. This time she didn't use the word because. This time she says, excuse me, I have 5 pages, may I use the Xerox machine? Same request, but took out the word because. She did this multiple times. Only 60% complied. 94% versus 60%. Then she changed it around again, and she said, excuse me, I have 5 pages, may I use a Xerox machine because I have to make some copies. You know, duh. That was her reason. Because I have to make some copies. Well, why else would you use a Xerox machine? But here's the interesting thing. 93% agreed. Even though she gave a lame excuse, that word because the words you use attract or repel people. We talked about, you know, if you use the word paperwork versus contract. They had problems at gas stations where they had the price. It was more expensive to use your credit cards. Anybody remember this? It was more expensive to use your credit card, and people didn't want to use your credit card because it cost them an extra 2-3 cents a gallon. So they switched it around. So here is the price. But if you want to use cash, there's a cash discount. Just the way it's packaged. A lot of people just change this. And so the words that you use is critical.